Welcome to SLA, where you can learn to avoid gaslighting yourself and your language teaching practices,
break down academic gatekeeping on second language acquisition,
and girl boss your way through dynamic, engaging, and research-based language teaching.
I'm Ben Fisher Rodriguez, and my pronouns are he, him.
I'm Bill Langley, and my pronouns are he, him.
I'm Brian Smith, and my pronouns are he, they.
Let's slay. Hi, everybody, and welcome back to SLA, Language Acquisition for Everybody. Today, we are talking about reading, drag her, slay her, read her. Sipping on that truth tea, hunty, I live. Now, reading plays a fundamental role in language acquisition. We are kind of in agreement now that kids, and by kids, I mean learners, get a lot out of reading. When they read, they get spelling. They get mechanics such as, you know, like punctuation, but also grammar and endings and vocabulary and usage and all sorts of stuff. It is just reading does a lot of things for students developing language systems. So what are some ways that we can incorporate more reading, and what is going to be efficient reading strategies that we can use with students? Today we're going to focus more specifically on the idea of extensive reading, which can have many different names in the teaching world. You might have heard free voluntary reading, FVR, sustained silent reading, SSR, free choice reading, FCR, drop everything and read, that's DEAR, D-E-A-R. It has a lot of different names because it plays a big role in English education in the United States. I would argue, and I think that my co-host would argue, that it should play a big role in our additional language classes as well. So we're here in Gaslight. We're going to talk about things that went wrong, have gone wrong, are going wrong with extensive reading as we implement it in our classes. So we want to give kids time to read texts of their choice from a library. What could possibly go wrong? Bill, what's something you noticed that has gone wrong when you've done this, or that teachers can get wrong easily? Pitfalls we can pitfall into?
Yeah, so I think one of our big challenges for students and for teachers is we want to make sure that students know it is a valuable use of their time. And one of the things I've seen or heard of more of people doing is, oh, I'm going to let students read for 5 to 10 minutes. I'm going to respond to an email. I'm going to make sure I get my attendance done. And I don't know if students always see that as, we're doing something productive, or my teacher needs time to just do their everyday tasks. So I think something that is important is that we also are reading with students at the same time. I like to borrow books from my French colleagues, so that while students are reading Spanish to learn Spanish, I'm reading French to learn French. Or I'll be reading something, say, more age appropriate for myself in Spanish. Last year I read Laberinto del Fauno, Pan's Labyrinth, which was like a novelization by Guillermo del Toro, as we were watching Pan's Labyrinth in class. That was just great for me. And I think we also need to make sure that not just we're modeling reading, but also showing students that we enjoy it. It's not just something that we have to do. It's something that we're enjoying doing. So I think that'd be one of the big things. What about you, Brian? What have you seen go wrong?
I think if students are set off to read And even if we are reading along with them, but there's not anything that teachers are doing to ensure that they are understanding what they're reading, or that they're reading appropriate things, or that they're actually reading at all and they're not just pretending and having a book open in front of them. So having some
Or
measure
having a
of
book upside down in
accountability,
front of them.
right? Having something to hold students accountable, although I do think that you can definitely go overboard with that. And kind of discourage students from freely choosing to read, which is what we want. So I think there's definitely like a happy medium between not doing anything at all and then, giving them a test every day on, I don't know, some prescribed things that you want them to do, because that can kind of get away from the self-selected, self-guided, aspect of it. But it is also really important as a teacher to know that reading and reading comprehension is actually going on.
Yeah, I'm totally.
Have you all seen?
My husband and I talk a lot about how he when he was in, I think middle school, was in one of those programs where you like earn points by taking little quizzes about books or whatever. And then I think he became so intensely interested in the points that like when the points disappear because we all become adults and no one's giving us points or pizza coupons for reading anymore, like the desire to read also kind of goes with it. Because that extrinsic motivator is no longer there. And so that just bums me out because I am an extensive reader now as like an adult. And my husband just like doesn't enjoy it as much because it was like made not fun. Like we can beat, like Brian said, we can beat it to death. I think I'm gonna piggyback on what Brian said as well, that like we need to know that they're comprehending. And I think a potential pitfall is just like building a library full of interesting to us books. But like letting kids read anything at all, they could totally be picking books that they're just looking at the pictures of, or that they're like, getting every other word and kind of just cruising along and doing that and just, giving the impression of reading. So we want to have kind of guide them in a way to make sure that they're choosing books that are good for their level. And like remind ourselves too that a lot of the interesting, authentic resource sort of children's books were made to be read to them by caregivers. And so, like, unless we can't necessarily like sit down and read story time to every individual kid, so we need to be sure that like while they're on their own during this like free reading time, they're able to understand it, get enough from it that it becomes input for uptake and acquisition, as opposed to just like that's what French looks like is shapes, or German is just many. Oh, there's some more of those dots. That sure is interesting.
Something to go off on that is the and it kind of touched on this in the article, so I'm not going to step on your feet, Brian, if you bring it up, but I'll bring it up later if we don't get to it. Is that like these reading materials should be easy, and something that students and teachers struggle with is not understanding that it is okay and maybe even preferable for the reading to be too easy. So, have you ever heard of, I forget who I learned this from. And so, if someone knows, please let me know. But like the five finger rule. So, when you're reading a page, if there are more than five unknown words on that page, that is too hard. It needs to be as effortless as possible for you to get all the benefits of letting your brain process all the parts of the language, not just if you have to spend too much mental energy on understanding all of the words, your brain might not be processing all of the different parts of the language that
And like how it
and
all
need to
fits
become
together.
more, to become more accurate, fluent, whatever in your language use.
And I mean, like, it needs to be, you need to be able to focus on the meaning of the text. Otherwise, you're not going to get into that kind of incidental learning that happens, is which is one of the best benefits that come from extensive reading, which we'll talk about in just a little bit. So yeah, if you don't even really know what is happening on the page, then you're not gonna be able to just, pick up on different vocabularies and structures and things.
Totally. I think another pitfall is that, like, sometimes we just don't have money for it. Like, you have to get, if we're trying to get material that feels easy so we can focus on meaning, you're looking kind of for a specific thing. And that thing is out there. I think for the languages that the three of us teach, like, there's, more or less material available, but there is material available for students to read that is pitched at a level for learners. In even specifically in like a high school classroom in the United States, I think that sometimes they're written with those in mind. And so it's out there. I would never encourage any teacher to be spending out of their own pocket extensively for this sort of thing. And it can be very discouraging in trying to build those libraries if you run into just like, yeah, it sure would be nice to have all those books like so and so has, except I have $0 for that, or in general.
Don't spend excessively
Definitely.
for ex don't spend extensively for extensive reading.
You
So
know,
depending on
young.
your situation, I would really recommend looking into like either seeking out, I don't know, like your parent teacher association or some kind of group that offers grants for teachers, or even just, I know there are websites where you can create projects that can earn, you can ask for donations and things like that, crowdfunding type things, which you can, there are different options for that other than just shelling out yourself, if you don't necessarily get a budget, to use.
Totally agree. And I'm just like loath to think that people like just don't allot time for it at all, because it is so powerful. The benefits are so many, and like it is just so potent. I hope that all teachers take the time to like that, like the time that you carve out is actually worth something.
I think I've got one more pitfall that I kind of fell into like my first couple of years of trying to implement an FVR program, and that is not clearly explaining to students why we're doing it. And hopefully after we go through the article today, you'll be able to have like more information on giving students those reasoning, giving them those reasonings behind why we sit down and read something easy. So, yeah, like we pick up words, we understand verb endings, stuff like that. So, being able to clearly explain why we're doing this for two students, I think can help with motivation along the way because they want to know why we're doing it. And I don't even think it needs to be like a I can statement for the day. I think it's just we're doing this because it helps us build vocabulary, or we're doing this because it helps us build sentence structure.
Definitely. Okay, so I'm gonna head on over to the gatekeep section where I will discuss this article for this episode entitled The Effects of Extensive Reading on Reading Comprehension, Reading Rate, and Vocabulary Acquisition by Namhee Suk, published in 2016. This is a study that was done on the effects of implementing extensive reading for specifically university level English as a foreign language students in Korea, where they had several like two control groups and two experimental groups. All groups received some intensive reading instruction, which basically means they are given a challenging text that I believe was from a textbook that they would be asked comprehension questions on and be expected to learn, memorize vocabulary and be quizzed on vocabulary from that specific difficult text. And then the experimental groups were also, they also engaged in an extensive reading program where they needed to read, self-selected rated readers in addition to the textbook work that they did during class. So they had time dedicated during the class time. It was 30% of the class time that was dedicated to the extensive reading, And then they also were expected to read outside of class for homework. All students, like I said, they got that intensive instruction, but then only the experimental group got the extensive reading instruction. Some things to know about this. A definition that was given for extensive reading by Grabe and Stoller in 2011. It is an approach in which learners read large quantities of material that are within their linguistic competence. So what we were saying earlier about the fact that it needs to be something that learners can actually understand and not just, a library of the best, great novels or whatever it is in the language. So that is compared to intensive reading, which is the analysis of short, challenging texts and memorizing difficult vocabulary. So the study does recognize that some intensive reading, along with explicit instruction, was required to develop reading skills. However, intensive only reading instruction limits students' exposure to the comprehensible language. And so the studies kind of in the literature review that were identified, they showed positive impacts of extensive reading, but it wasn't necessarily, the studies hadn't necessarily shown like that it was better than any other kind of reading instructions. So this study sought to kind of fill some gaps in terms of what does having some intensive plus extensive reading do, and specifically measuring students' acquisition of vocabulary based on the texts of the readers, the graded readers that they were reading. One of the issues with the previous studies is that they were given kind of a general vocabulary test based on, words that may not have even occurred in the graded readers because they're not high frequency words. And so the graded readers themselves are usually written using the 2,000 to 3,000 most common words in the language to ensure that students are able to understand it and they get lots of repetitions of words that are used often. Whereas if you have like an authentic text, for example, that's written for native speakers of the language, there's going to be a lot of vocabulary that is not high frequency, it's pretty low frequency, so you don't see it that often. Not to say that it's not important, but learners who are learning the language for the first time, they definitely need to know more of the words that are used most often. So, let's see here. One of the other important concepts here is the idea of implicit learning. So I had mentioned before how during extensive reading, one of the goals is for students to incidentally learn vocabulary, and that's related to this concept. So Ellis defines implicit learning as the acquisition of knowing, or sorry, acquisition of knowledge about the underlying structure of a complex stimulus environment by a process which takes place naturally, simply, and without conscious operation. So it's what you're learning without realizing that you're learning it, to sum it up. So the study generally, let's see, let's go on down to the discussion. So they found that there was a notable gain in the experimental group in terms of incidental vocabulary acquisition. The study found that there was a significant difference in reading comprehension between the control and experimental groups. However, the impact of extensive reading on reading comprehension was relatively small, but the students only had 30% less intensive reading instruction, and yet they significantly outperformed students who were in the control group that only did that intensive reading instruction. So basically, it's the amount of with to which they performed better was not monumental, but considering that they got less of that specific kind of instruction, that's pretty significant to note. So there was not. So the previous studies, like we said before, there was not a huge difference in terms of experimental, sorry, students who are doing extensive reading versus intensive reading. And in those studies, they compared students who were only doing extensive reading during class. And this is more one that has both the intensive and extensive. And so the author believes that that contributes to the differences. And specifically that reading more in a shorter amount of time contributes to that significant effect. So, for example, in this study, around 152,714 words were read on average in 15 weeks, one semester, as compared to another study where students read more, 165,000 words, but over the 28 weeks, so the whole entire school year. So, perhaps having students read, fewer words, but more compressed, I guess, in terms of time, could be more effective. So this study basically had some empirical evidence that systematically designing extensive reading programs plays a crucial role in vocabulary acquisition, reading rate, and reading comprehension. So what does this all mean? What is the point? What do we need to take away from this? The author suggests that teachers need to give students specific reading goals to motivate them to read. So, for example, having a goal of 200,000 words over the semester amounts to about one graded reader per week. And so, an area where teachers might struggle with that is determining, well, how much should I encourage them to set a goal for? And it really depends on the learner's reading proficiency level. So if a learner is a novice reader or elementary learner, as it says in the article, you might have a goal of 60,000 words, which would be about the same as reading one reader that's shorter, that contains 4,000 words. But if they are more intermediate or getting into upper intermediate, maybe 200,000 or more would result in the kind of the extensiveness of the extensive reading that they need to do in order to pick up on vocabulary and such. And then there should also be specific reading activities incorporated into an extensive reading program to motivate them to read and also provide for some accountability. Teachers should spend some time introducing the reading materials to students to build their interest, and then crucially, providing time during class for them to actually read. So one way that teachers can be more successful in doing that is by gaining knowledge about the books that they have in their collection by reading them. Collecting information about what books in general are popular among students, and then talking to the students about the books that they have read to get better recommendations. Some suggestions for accountability measures. They had some program called mReader, which I believe was like an online bank of like reading comprehension quizzes. They had student reading logs, having students recommend books to read, and then having brief discussions with the students as the instructor. And they recommend that teachers should have ongoing guidance for the students throughout an extended reading program. So not just setting them loose and not really ever paying attention to, whether they understand what they're reading or if they even, are enjoying it. So if they're experiencing difficulty, you need to be able to guide them to something that's going to be more beneficial for them. And yeah, so limitations of the study that were mentioned, it wasn't really random sampling, which means that you can't necessarily say that, this would happen 100%, in any other study. It's specific to this context. They also assumed so that the tests that they used were actually based on the library of readers that the students read. So the vocabulary was certainly within those 155 books from which they were able to choose, versus a general vocabulary test that might have less high frequency words. And so it was assumed that most words on the test were encountered in the books, although students only read about on average 10 of the 155. So depending on what books they were and what vocabulary was specifically being tested, there is a chance that they never actually ran into those words. But given that it's taken from the list of most common words in that language, English language, it's much more likely that they did. So they got repeated inputs from those high frequency words. And also, another limitation was for the control group, they took the same test, although they didn't read the same books. And if the test was based on the library of books, there's a question of, well, is that an accurate measure of their vocabulary if they didn't actually, didn't have the same exposure to it? But considering again that they're high frequency, it's likely that those are words that they should know anyway. So, any immediate thoughts on the study?
So you were muted, Ben, but I'll just go ahead and untake it. So first off, wonderful job, Brian. This was not the easiest article that I've ever read. It had some it talked about some testing measures that I was unfamiliar with. So trying to wrap my head around that while getting all the pertinent information from it took me a little bit longer, but so you did a great job of explaining all of this stuff to us. And something that I wanted to bring up specifically was that, you mentioned how it talks about like this study tested students on the vocabulary that is in the readers that they read. And I think for our context, those of us who do focus on comprehension-based language teaching, we are using high-frequency words in class all the time. So I think it's probably a pretty good indicator for us in our context, of what an extensive reading program can do. There were a lot of really good quotes in here that I really enjoyed, and I'm trying to scroll to one really quickly. I think just to speak on the pitfalls that we were talking about earlier. When we were talking about like why people might not incorporate this as much, and the quote was, one reason that fluent reading is not often viewed as an important reading goal in second language reading curriculum. One reason is that it's not viewed as a goal in L2 reading curriculum. Although fluency is a crucial part of advanced reading comprehension, fluency is often overlooked in L2 reading courses. Another reason is that the power of implicit learning opportunities is often not appreciated. Teachers and students do not feel that students are learning when they are reading quietly in a classroom. And I think that's definitely one of the things that we need to. One of the barriers that we need to break down, that like this is a useful, this is a good use of our time. Especially, like I said, like when we are focusing on high frequency words in our classroom. And another maybe point of how this is probably even more beneficial for our contexts is that the way that the article defined high frequency words is much more what they consider to be high frequency. I consider maybe to be mid to low frequency. Not always, but like a lot of our readers that we use in class are centered around maybe like the top 500 to the top 1,000 words, with a couple super low frequency thrown in, but those are usually footnoted so that students can read them. So I'd be interested in seeing like what the graded readers they used in the study look like in comparison to the graded readers that we use in our classes.
Totally. Yeah. My big like takeaway from this, and it made me like feel very affirmed and excited, is just like the I always look to see like where the control and experimental groups are kind of like at the starting point. Because I'm like, oh, if you start somebody high and then they just get higher like than the other group that started low, then I'm like, okay, cool, good job. But this group, the experimental group, started with lower vocab, reading speed, reading comprehension than the control group, and they caught up, and then they even surpassed them. And the speed at which they started like making that growth was really incredible. And I was telling myself as I was reading this that that only is going to have over time a compounding effect where they're going to start acquiring this, and then because they have that solid base of the high frequency stuff, they're going to move into a kind of bigger pond of reading and then be able to acquire the next level of frequency stuff. And then it's just going to kind of go up maybe exponentially from there. And so it made me excited again to think about my students, like it starts slow and then it really gets building, and then it can feel very redeeming to kind of look at the material that you started reading that was less dense, less difficult to read, and then look at what you're reading now and really recognize that there was a marked difference because you made such huge growth. And I like that this class kind of makes it takes a both and approach, which is I think that's something we can port to our situations right now in our classes, is that we teach skills of reading by giving lots of input and maybe modeling writing and reading text together as a class. That's the kind of intensive reading that the students in both groups in the study were receiving, but they also the experimental group also got that extensive reading, the chance to choose books to read, and so we don't have to like throw away everything we ever knew about reading. We can do both, and ultimately, whatever you do, like the students are going to make gains in reading if it's intensive or extensive, but the throwing in the extensive reading part is going to make that put the rocket on that growth in vocabulary, in reading speed, in reading comprehension. And that's exciting. It makes me want to keep, it makes me want to look more. I was thinking about like Brian was talking about setting word count goals and how like daunting that feels. A lot of the publishers that publish comprehensible readers in this day and age have them on websites and actually list word counts. And so you can get a rough estimation, and maybe you can make your TA write down the word counts of every book so that a kid could, cross-check and reference and stuff. Totally.
All right, well, with that, are we ready to girl boss our way into our extensive reading programs?
Into the sunset. Well, let's do
It is what it is. So like I wanted to maybe with to wrap things up, talk about some of our successes. Like, when did we feel that our extensive reading programs were being beneficial to our students? And since you just ended with like the word count stuff, it made me feel validated in how I just before students came back this year, I organized my bookshelves from least amount of unique words to most amount of unique words, and how that could help me set up this like word count goal. So not only like just the number of words, but the number of different words that students are being exposed to. So maybe I haven't started my extensive reading program yet this year. We're only in week two, so I'll probably start it next week with level four. And so yeah, I think I've got some ideas from this article and on what to maybe like focus on with students as we lean into free reading this year. Something else that I think was kind of like a highlight for me, like in my reading program in my class, is last year I did a book project at the end of the school year. Students kept asking me for a project, and I'm not really huge on them. So I was like, how can I take what I want them to be doing and make it seem like what they want or feel that they should be doing? So in I selected probably 12 different titles from my library, and all of them I had at least two copies of. So then students in pairs chose one book. And this was at the end of the school year, so I think maybe they had 2 full weeks in class to just read the book with a partner, so they had the support if they needed it. And as they were doing, as they were reading, they just did a dual entry journal every day to like help with like the accountability of the projects, not necessarily accountability of an extensive reading program. So they just wrote about gave me a couple sentences in Spanish about what they read that day, and a couple sentences in Spanish or English to show me that they thought about what they were reading and how maybe it connected to their life, how things within the book connected to the world, or what they learned about the world through reading their books. And I think that's something that I'm going to keep with my extensive reading program this year, is that dual entry journal. I think that it would work for my learners. I know that that is cumbersome for some people, but for some in some other contexts, but I do think that, and if you know what, maybe I'll try it for a couple weeks and they will hate it and I'll get rid of it. Who knows? But yeah, I think through that though, I had a lot of, oh, sorry. And then we finished with like doing the hexagonal thinking, and students did presentations on the book to the entire class, where students had to rank whether or not they thought they would be interested in reading that book or not. And through that, I think students, one, I was kind of interested in what students, if students might like iron out some of those little errors that they make, or I'm putting errors in quotes. But and like some did, there were some that still they need some more exposure to the correct forms, but I think for the most part, like I did see like vocabulary growth in it. They had a purpose behind doing it, and they had to do it a lot. So I think, and then there was like at least a mirage of choice, like I gave them a few to select from. But how about you guys? What are some like reading successes, reading program successes that you've had?
I think I'm going to build off on what you're talking about with your project, which is like finding different ways to talk about books and about reading in ways that keep it fresh and interesting to kids. Sometimes after reading, I had never done a dual entry journal, but now I'm kind of intrigued by that, and I'm like, maybe there's something to that, and I'll experiment with that too. Because I'm mostly like right after reading, I would just be like, tell the person next to you a new word that you learned from your book today. Tell the person next to you the most interesting sentence you read in your book today. And then they start talking about the books because they're trying to explain, like, oh, I read you this random sentence, but it kind of like this. And like, maybe if it was in English, even a little bit too, I'm like, hey, yeah, that's fine, because I'm like tricking them into being like, isn't this book interesting? I'm telling you about this thing. Or conversely, I'd be like, tell your partner the most boring thing that happened in your book today. So kids are reading things like the phone rang. And we did a dramatic reading of those after that. And that was just goofy, because then it was just like, she entered the room. And you're like, that. Yep, no, with no context, that is pretty boring. A variation on that that is also super fun is Anne Marie Chase's Game of Quotes, which takes kids' free choice reading and turns it into a game where like they get a prompt. It's like a party game where you get some sort of goofy prompt, and you have them go back into their free choice reading and look for a quote from the book that kind of fits that prompt and maybe is goofy or creative or something like that. And it always goes to Wacko Town kind of immediately, but the kids are reading so aggressively their books like again and again, because they're like, oh, I know something happened that was like, a good prompt to like things my teacher would say at the DMV or something, like something stupid, whatever. So I think tricking kids to talk about books in different ways, recommending them to each other or talking about like why they're garbage or, if they didn't like them, like whatever, just like capitalizing on that interest. I'm also I want to harken back to something that Bill said about his library, which was that he arranged them kind of by, it sounds like word count, and frequency, that sort of thing. And I think that's really smart. I think they can be really helpful and supportive. I think it's so important to know what's on your shelves. There are great resources out there, such as the World Language Bookshelf, that have lists of books, and there's lots of great books on there. And you can find that's just a great place to get started when building your library. And they have more information about the books on the website too. So it's just like a bevy of information, and that's really helpful. But I think I would go as far as saying that like you need to probably read all the books that go into your bookshelf, unless they come like specifically recommended and thoroughly read by a colleague. Because when kids take in linguistic like input from the books, they're taking in linguistic input, but they're also taking in input about ideas of culture and perceptions of other cultures and perceptions of difference. So it's important to really know like what they're reading. Like if they're reading stuff that reinforces stereotypes, that plays into tropes, that doesn't support a nuanced view of different countries, cultures, or people. Maybe that book shouldn't be on your shelf, no matter how high frequency the words are, or how even interesting the story might seem on the face. I'm going to plug another organization that's called the Language Learner Literature Advisory Board, that does reviews of classroom literature like this, that comment on how are different identities presented in texts. And then teachers can make kind of a judgment for themselves of whether or not they want those representations on their bookshelf for kids to pick up during this free choice time when they have freedom to choose whatever they like. So I think knowing your shelf is super important, knowing what's on your shelf, providing lots of options, but also knowing what they are. And if you're feeling like, oh gosh, I'm gonna have to read all these books, either find a trusted colleague or a trusted source like Lab, or just know that a lot of these books are for advanced readers like us are readable in a sitting of one or two class periods. So you can power through something really quickly and then be like, yeah, it's fine, and throw it on your shelf. And that's not so hard an investment. And then you get to read more. You get more input too. You're telling me I can acquire more at my job? Fantastic.
Yeah, thanks for making sure to bring that up. I think that is also an important part of our classroom libraries, making sure that one, not only are the students in our classroom visible on our shelves, but also that we're making sure that we're not reinforcing maybe not so favorable ideas of co different communities. And then one more plug on, and then we'll see if Brian's got anything to add. But one more plug with the World Language Bookshelf. That's by Adam Gead, and he also has, I don't know if it's linked on the World Language Bookshelf's website or not, but Adam has a lot of resources for getting books into your classroom. He was telling me that he's got a new Facebook group. I forget the title of it off the top of my head, but I'll make sure to put it in the show notes, where he just shares a lot of ways to get books into your classroom. So check that out so that you can get your kids reading extensively. Brian, what about your successes in class with reading?
Yeah, so I'm thinking about the organization of the library itself. So when I started out, I had about like one bookshelf of books, and like I immediately started putting little stickers on them in terms of like difficulty levels. So I had like green is easy and yellow is intermediate and pink is advanced. And what I noticed is that despite my students participating in this program for 4 years, a lot of them never really ventured into the intermediate category, even though I could tell from the like intensive reading instruction that we did that they were able to handle them. So I took off all the stickers and I decided to organize it by genre. So what I have now is I have like these little rotating bookshelves that have like fantasy or like comedy or mystery, like stuff like that. Which I think really helps to build students' interest in the books because they're like, I like fantasy, or like, hey, like I've mostly been reading this kind of book. Now I want to try something that's about this topic. So I think that doing something like that can lead students to read something that, might be a little bit more challenging, although we still want to keep in mind that it should still be mostly comprehensible. We don't want them to be reading, 18th century literature that they can't understand, if they're not ready for it yet. And something else that I started doing, so I'm really a big fan of like visual learning and like public learning. So like I started out having students write reviews of books on like Post-it notes, and then they would like put them up on the wall, and they give a star rating out of 5 of the book and then leave a comment about what they thought of it. And then I had my classes kind of get into a competition between who can get the most reviews up. And that was fun and great until it mostly became about the rewards that they got from the competition. So I noticed a lot of Post-its going up that were just like, they didn't really show much evidence of understanding the book. So the Post-its went away, and instead what we have now is I have students write on a Padlet. So it's like, first of all, less physical paper material that can kind of clutter up, but also I feel that they have to get a little bit more, I don't know, intentional about what they're writing, because all the students in every class have access to that, so they can actually read it, and it's not, under the 15th Post-it or something like that. And I've also been able to display that on like a screen. So as people are walking by in the classroom, they can see like flashes of reviews that students have written. It's like, oh, so and so gave a 4-star review on this book. Maybe I want to read it now. And I've noticed like students like calling it out, like, hey, that's your review. Like, and so I don't know, I've noticed more conversation on the books that we have in the library based on that. I'm tr working on a way to make that more public to like the general school community, and not just like if you're happens to be near my library, but that is to be determined. So, yeah, and I guess just something else, you were talking about having students talk about, what was the most boring or most interesting thing that they read. When I also first started out, I had them mostly like writing in a reading log, which can get kind of repetitive. And so what I made sure to do with the beginners is that everything, like all the accountability pieces that I had, were oral conversations. So that way I could walk around and just listen to what they're saying about the books as my gauge of whether they're understanding or not. And I don't know, I feel like that helped to kind of keep that love of reading alive, because they're to them, it's like, we're just talking about the story. But to me, it's like a test of reading comprehension. And so I don't know. I think specifically for the novice learners, you want to make it as fun while still educational as possible, and like never make it, kind of like drudgery that they have to do. It's mostly about, what they want to do, and learning from what they're reading is the benefit from that.
Love that. My ideal goal is to start kids so small so that it's so manageable and easy, and so they can develop that love, like you said. And I start them literally, I think it was when I first started, to do like 1 or 2 minutes. And the kids usually, like, at that point are like, I could have read way longer. And I'm like, yes. So like if they win early, then it just kind of keeps going. And I kind of want to get them up close to like 10 minutes. Because again, as we can see, they invested 30% of class time in this study, and it was like gangbusters, like crazy. And so I want to get there. And I'm also thinking of like when to start this. Because some teachers feel confident setting their kids to reading at the end of level one, like in the second semester, like start up our free reading program, because they have access to the texts, because the students are ready, because of a variety of factors. I start my kids usually in like level two, kind of like we start the year doing all the kind of stuff that we had done in level one, and then I kind of like ease them into the library, which gives me time to talk about the books that are in the library, make it sound very interesting, kind of preview the little competition I do where if a kid finishes a book, they get to put a sticker on a poster, and kids love stickers. So like that like builds up, but until they're ready for that point, how do we get them ready for that point? Like, it can feel really daunting to even get started. I would say you have to keep up, obviously, that intensive reading. That's the support that they need right from the beginning, is they need you reading with them, a class text that you all read together, that you discuss with them, that you clarify meaning, maybe, do some focus on form, pop-up grammar, whatever helps, is supportive, but you read with them and ensure comprehension, that you compose texts with your students. You can use a technique like write and discuss to create level appropriate texts for your students that are naturally, of course, going to have high frequency words in them because they're going to be a text about whatever in the world. And those could even go into your library if you were feeling really wild and crazy. You could turn them into little mini books or whatever. But the things that we do in class that get those students to the point where they're ready for those standing in front of the library making their choice are reading with them, modeling that reading is like fun and cool in this class, scaffolding writing and reading together. I don't know. We just want to make reading look cool.
Yeah. And you actually just reminded me. I actually have students make their own books at the end of level one. That's our like end of the year thing. And they, oh my God, they love that so much. When they first get into the class and they notice the library and they go over and they're like, oh my God, so and so made this book that I knew from, whatever eighth grade from last year. And then they're like, wait a minute, are you gonna ask us to do that? I'm like, yes, I am. And they're like, there's no way I could create a book. But then after the whole year of instruction and like holding and reading and everything, they know basically, what, they can, they feel more confident in their abilities to do that. And they make some really funny, interesting books that of course I proofread before they actually end up in the library. But that is another way to expand your library if, buying books outright is not necessarily an option. You can make them, sometimes for cheaper, depending on, how you get your supplies. But yeah, it's definitely a great way to build interest.
All right. Well, I think we did quite a deep dive today into extensive reading. So hopefully, I mean, I know that I came out with some ideas that I'm going to incorporate this year as we start our reading program. Hope everyone else was able to find something as well. So get out there, make sure you can get some books because reading is what?
Fundamental.
Fundamental. Ha 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 ha.